With me today to talk about people and their stories of Beaver County is Chris Padgett.
So there was once a young fellow who was mad for stories. Everywhere there was storytelling going on, he was to be found.
People have always told stories, and examples of storytelling can be found in every country and every culture. Today's big question is, why are stories important?
You're listening to the Beaver County History Podcast, a production of the Social Voice Project.
How to express ourselves by stories? How does it work?
I must be honest, a 3-minute conversation from one point of view can be pretty boring.
I honestly believe the next decade is going to be right back to storytelling. I think we need to get right back to the campfire.
And the idea that I want to share with you today is a philosophy of listening. Because that sort of being seen and being heard and being made to understand that we matter in this world, that is one of our fundamental human needs.
For many people, history is kind of a subject where people have to memorize dates and names. But the fact of the matter is this history that is really entertaining and a kind of history that can help you to understand yourself and your family.
Oral history is a type of primary source, and it's one that allows voices to be heard that wouldn't necessarily get recognized through documents. And a lot of times, historians will look at documents that come from major political figures, or they'll look at newspapers, but that leaves out a wide set of people that don't write things down. Oral history brings into the light those stories about ordinary individuals who are the people taking part in historical events. Understand that they are creators of history as historians, but they're also agents of history as actors.
Kevin Farkas, I'm with the Social Voice Project. We produce this podcast to explore and celebrate the rich heritage and significant local history throughout Beaver County. And you know, a part of that history is people, right? Mm-hmm. People. History is just not stuff, you know, behind glass, old faded photographs. History is also about people and their experiences, their lives. So with me today to talk about people and their stories of Beaver County is Chris Padgett.
Yes.
Who is a wonderful filmmaker and someone very interested in what I would call oral histories. Some people don't like that academic term. Hmm. Some people like to say just, you know, human stories, people's experiences, memories. What do you call the stories that you gather throughout history? And we'll talk about your project in particular, Chris. Hmm. But what do you call these stories that you gather?
Well, I've been trying to figure out a way to categorize them. For a while, I was calling them sort of like video portraits, but I think you're right. They're kind of like their life experiences of people. I would probably, tend to say they're human experiences, I guess, human lives and stories and things like that, because they're connected to things that people have learned throughout living, by living their lives, I guess. So,
well, who cares?
Are you asking me who cares?
Yes, I'm asking you who cares, because I get that all the time. Who cares? No, I mean, it's a serious question.
Okay.
Hey, your neighbor down the street was in the Korean War. What's his story? Why would you be interested, for example, in talking to that person and finding out what their experiences are?
Well, I mean, there's so many reasons. In the example that you mentioned, or any example, I was just thinking about it like the past couple of days, and there's something about, I think, seeking beauty and finding beauty, and you can find it in a lot of people's stories because through what they've endured and through what they've had to overcome and anything like that, there's sometimes a hard-pressed beauty and wisdom that people have found just by trying to come up against their life and sometimes up against themselves, whatever the struggle might be. I think it's a common experience that people have where they've learned something or they've experienced something. And I think the sharing of their stories does something for them. It does something for us who listen, because we can, I think, have a give and take that that both or all people who are involved in that process can learn from and become more full people, I guess.
There's definitely a dialectic here. I mean, mm-hmm. that it is a give and take, as you put it. It's a back and forth conversation.
Yep.
Right? I mean, you know, some of this work is just someone talking on a camera, and you don't, there's the omniscient narrator, the absent communicator, interlocutor, as we say in linguistics. But these conversations are very significant for both sides of, in our case, like the microphone or the camera lens. Mm-hmm. In my background of doing veterans oral history, you know, we've had World War II veterans, 70 years removed, who are going through the catalog of events, and they start thinking about their buddies, mm-hmm. and they start thinking about horrific experience, sad experience, whatever, and just break down and start crying.
Right.
And afterwards, and this is my point of this, we would be told, you know what? I haven't thought of that in years. That was good for me. Hmm. Cathartic.
Right? Yep.
To use the technical term, it was cathartic to tell that story. And for us who listen and bear witness to those experiences, it's almost like it's a mirror back at us. You know, it's like all good artists do. They really just present a mirror to you so you can examine experience through your own lens or your own ears to find some sort of value in that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I mean, yeah, I totally agree, because I think, like, the thing that I like, or probably I value the most, or one of the things I value the most in all of this work is how it raises up people's voices and how it raises up the act of listening and receiving people, receiving each other as you have a conversation with them. Because, I mean, you know, like, I'm not going to talk about the way, like, our day and age is right now or whatever too much, but listening is kind of an intentional activity where you sit down with someone and you give them space to kind of explore who they are. And also, like, there's an exploring of who you are. And so I think, like, to make intentional spaces for those conversations to happen, and then being able to share those, like, put it out there for other people to also have that act of listening, I think it just raises everyone up when you do that. So I really appreciate the value in the work that you're doing with it too.
Well, thanks. And I think it's a great thing that, you know, we are getting to know each other, because we're really working on the same side of the coin here. Mm-hmm. And I think we can't do enough of this. It's truly, it's really endless. You know, this is a huge
ocean. It is endless. It's hard to think about the elephant, I found. But then you're not thinking about the individuals, I guess, when you start doing that. So that's what I was realizing I was doing. I was like, there's this elephant. But then I was like, no, it's about the individual. So
yeah. Or maybe it's both.
Right? Or maybe it's both. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has a story, right? And that's...
Everyone does, yep.
For as many people as there are, right, in our communities,
right,
in our town, cities, there are those stories. Have you ever heard of Story Trek?
I don't think so.
It's a production of Brigham Young University, and they have this guy. He's a wonderful guy. They go into these communities, and it's sort of like, let's put our finger down on a map and go knock on this person's door and find a story. You know, it's a bit reality TV, but it's also, you know, a bit StoryCorps.
Okay.
It's definitely about, you know, the human experience. So. Mm-hmm. And it's making the ordinary extraordinary. It just attests to the fact that we all have something in our lives that is worth sharing, that is emblematic of who we are.
Definitely.
You know, it's a heuristic for us all to sort of like, what can we learn from this? Mm-hmm. You know, because we learn from other people's experiences. First, our parents and our family, and outward from there. So this is really important stuff. Now, you're not from this area, right?
I am not. No, I'm from Illinois.
You're from Illinois. Mm-hmm. And yet here you are. you have this wonderful film company called Human City Films, and this project in particular called Rivertown Anthology.
Yes. Voices of Beaver County, yes.
Yes, there you go. Mm-hmm. So how's a guy from Illinois, as we say right here, get mixed up with all this Rivertown stuff?
Well, let's see if I can figure out how to talk about this well. When I moved here, it was to stay close to my daughter, who's other side of her family lives in Ambridge, and her name's Annette. She's great. Anyway.
Shout out.
Shout out to Annette. But when I first moved here, I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to do. And I started working at a community garden in Aliquippa. And when I was sitting there and working on simple things, and people would come by and they would just start telling me their stories of what was going on in their lives, it was a different experience than what I had had in Illinois. I'm from a small town, but I began to notice that there were, for me anyway, my perspective of those experiences was that there was a authenticity and a vulnerability that people were willing to explore around here about their stories. And I found that when people did that, I was noticing a richness in it. And I had been wanting to use my background in filmmaking for something that I felt would listen well to people and not discount voices at all, but tried to offer a kind of justice to it, because I really had noticed some effects, even in my own life, of not listening to everyone around me. And I just felt like if there was something I could bring to an area that had started to mean so much to me with what it was sharing with me, to kind of like bring that out, I felt like I wanted to try. And I also felt like people around here, they seem like they really care about each other. They seem like they're really connected to each other, that there are some separations maybe, and this, I could be wrong about this, but between cities sometimes, there's this county kind of neighborhood of this shared experience and the dramatic turns that they've all experienced through the history of this area, that I felt like there was a wisdom that was a collective wisdom, an individual wisdom of things that people had gone through, and so much wisdom that people had. So much that they've learned through that process of either staying here after the mills closed, or any kind of like upheaval or turn in their lives. I felt like I had a lot to learn from people. There was a lot of beauty here in their stories, and that was worth preserving and capturing at least a piece of that. So that was a long answer.
Well, that's fine. That's good.
Yeah.
I would say that, you know, if you took someone from here and they went to Illinois, where you're from, mm-hmm. they might approach it the same way you're doing it here. They might say, hey, this is new. These people are different. You know, we get so used to our, you know, everyday lives.
Right.
And then we tend to, like, overlook, ignore, I don't know. It's, you know, yeah, we just don't notice those things that outsiders notice, right?
I think what you're pointing to is a little bit of, like, also something I've noticed, like, the way we feel about a community or that we're in, we might not notice things. It's like there's parallels between those kind of things in our own lives. Like we might not recognize our story has value because we're so used to it. Cause it's like, okay, that's something I've lived with my whole life. But then realizing that there's those parallel layers of like what's going on with us individually and how we feel about our collective. There's some lessons there too, I think, of that I want to learn more about. So.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned earlier, like, you know, that holding the mirror back up to people. Yeah, when you say to people, hey, your story matters, it's important. Oh, no, it's
right.
My story is important. And I've even had family members poo-poo getting grandpa on a microphone to tell a war story.
Because it's grandpa.
Oh, it's grandpa. But it's also like, hey, we heard these stories our whole lives. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, the significance wears off, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah, put in an outsider. Right. Then they're like, oh, are you kidding me? This is all amazing, interesting. And mm-hmm. and I think so. This is a history podcast. So, you know, we're talking about local history in the county here. Mm-hmm. And I see the same thing happening here. A lot of people look at these museums. So here we are in Merrick Art Gallery. People pass this every day. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was there when I was in fifth grade, you know, or I may have gone back sometime. It was the same stuff I saw when I was in fifth grade. You know,
right.
Why bother? It's all old news. Mm-hmm. Right. But I don't know. Every time I come here, I find something new, mm-hmm. right? I engage it two-way street. Yeah, we have to bring something to the table, right? We have to have this, you know, I would call like, you know, we have to have an historical imagination. We have to sort of romanticize this, I think. You mm-hmm. know, just think about these past places, events, and so forth, people. So that's what we bring to it. But these organizations also have a responsibility to take this stuff and engage us with it.
Right. Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this feeds into something that's relevant here.
Okay.
And that is the kind of work that you and I do, mm-hmm. you know, recording these stories, you mostly film, me mostly audio. If we were to just like take it out of the recorder and then put it up on YouTube, you know, a lot of people would be like, oh, well, it's okay, whatever. That's that guy's story, you know, big deal. So, you know, how do we get people interested in that stuff, right? And that's where like our media magic comes in. You know, as Orson Welles used to say, the magic is in the editing room.
Right.
So, yeah. To the degree that we can take these stories, these experiences, people's lives, and craft them, right? That's a deliberative word.
Right.
We craft those into something. I'm not saying fabricate them, but I'm saying create something that does capture someone's attention,
right?
Imagination, inspires them to listen, to watch, to think about. If we can do that, that's just gold, right? Yeah,
that's,
home run.
Yeah, that's the goal, I think.
And that's the hard part. It really is. That's where a lot of the labor is. That's where a lot of the creative is. That's where the expertise, you know, like you are a trained filmmaker. So I'm sure you're always reaching back into your training and going, what can I do here? How can I make this work?
And that and asking filmmaker friends or YouTube, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So this stuff just doesn't happen. We have to make this happen, you know, and that's... like I always tell people, they come in and like, you know, so we're in a space here, this microphone set up and there are wires everywhere and it's not a pretty sight. Good thing this is not on camera. It's not a pretty sight.
It's pretty to you and me, maybe.
That's right. That's right. So I would say it's like sausage making. It's a messy process.
Yeah.
But the end is so nice. And I'll tell you just the weird thing about this. When I first started to do this work, I was working with a fellow and he says, why do you take pictures of the set with all the wires and stuff like that? And I said, it's the same reason when I would write up the show notes for these interviews, I would always talk about the interview context. Here we are. This was recorded
right
at the Heinz History Center. You know, it was this beautiful spring day. You know, that sort of, I always try to contextualize this to make it real.
Yeah.
And so when you see a photograph of this messy set with the wires and the lights and maybe a cookie board with a fake little, you know, window shading on the back wall. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
To get where we need to go, that wonderful film, that story that we capture. Yeah, we have to go through all this. And people need to know that, I think.
I think so. I like those behind the scenes kind of things, too, when they're incorporated. Because, like, if I'm filming something and I include in the edit, like, when someone's, like, testing their microphone. Like, I'm working on a trailer for this stuff right now. And I'm including some of that because I just like that kind of like reality of like, this is a production, but there's a realness with that happening and there's a realness with this story too. And it's all, this is all kind of showing what it is. So it connects somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like those authentic moments though. It breaks up the production from being too glossy, right?
Exactly. At the heart of what we do, we are human beings. So
yeah.
You know, with all of our experiences and memories, and sometimes those experiences and memories are not exactly accurate. Sometimes they're false. Sometimes they're just fictitious. That's all part of it, you know. Now, in the academic sense of oral history work, I mean, we would be working and trying to sort of triangulate the veracity of all this work. And whatever. That's not what I do. That's not what I'm interested in. This is my thought on it. Man, you want to tell me that you just stepped off the moon and you're Superman? Okay,
right.
That's your story.
Uh-huh.
If that's your story to tell, okay.
Yeah. Right?
So I'm that kind of oral historian, I would say. Sometimes you can tell, sometimes you can't. You know, I've had some weird
answers. Real,
well, I've learned like, oh, wait a minute, that wasn't true, that story. Because, you know, you hear things or you find out things to be true. I had one fellow who had all these photographs from World War II, the iconic stuff you see in Life magazine. He had them. He had these photographs. He took them with his brownie. I said, you took these? Oh, yeah. I carried a Browning all through the war. So, he literally had that famous picture of Charles de Gaulle standing with his arms crossed.
Okay.
And he said, I took that picture. And I said, this is that famous picture that you see everywhere. And he's like, well, I took that. So, I go and did some research. And then I'm looking at the iconic picture on the internet. What? Are you kidding me? It's identical. And then I start to look at it and say, oh, wait a minute. The fingers are different.
Oh, interesting.
The photographer who took that picture at the Hotel Marseille, I think it was in France, took a picture, and this guy was standing right over his shoulder, and he took a picture like 2 seconds later after de Gaulle kind of recomposed himself. That's my theory, right?
That would be pretty cool if that was...
It freaked me out. It blew my mind. Are you kidding me? This guy is like some of the most classic pictures of World War II. He took with his camera.
Huh.
I think what those pictures were the souvenir pictures that they sold on the streets. And apparently this was a thing. I researched this. So either he was BSing me,
right?
Or he was just didn't remember, or in his mind, this was true. Mm-hmm. I come to find out that they sold these photographs on street corners. The GIs bought them up like crazy.
Okay.
And I think that's what he had, a collection of these souvenir photos.
Right.
Hey, that's your story. Okay. I got the story. I don't think this is probably the first time I ever went public with that.
Okay.
And I'm not mentioning his name, but
I've run across a couple of things like that too, where I'm just kind of like, I don't know where like the objective truth lies with this, but I think I'm not here to find that out a lot of the time when someone's sharing with me their story about who they are as a human and who they're becoming and stuff like that. So
do you find that people have difficulty telling their stories?
That's a good question. It probably depends on the person, you know, and where they are in the process of it, I guess. If you're in the midst of a story that's unresolved and you feel like you're trying to, especially if it's a struggle, I don't know. It's too hard to say like truths with this, I guess. But I think sometimes if people are in the midst of things, they might be less prone to talk about them because they're trying to figure them out. But
it's incomplete.
They don't know what they're learning from it yet, and they don't know how to process it because there's a processing happening. There's some videos I've been really grateful to do for a nonprofit called the Still Remembered Project. It's this nonprofit that comes alongside mothers and fathers who have had early infant loss or miscarriages. I've gotten to do some videos where people just tell me their stories about them, and they've really been a wide range where some people are like, this just happened for them. And for other people, it's like, it's been like decades. But with grief or with struggle or with anyone's story, it's kind of like you see just kind of like the process of it. I don't know. It's a hard question to answer. Like, is it hard for people to tell their stories? Because there's so many things that play into it. You know, there can be how they feel about themselves. It can be how they feel about how other people see them. There's this author, her name's Brené Brown. Have you heard of her? But she talks a lot about vulnerability being an act of courage. So whenever I come across someone who's willing to share their story, I recognize that there's probably a courageous act happening in front of me while they're doing that, because, you know, it's a risky thing to be vulnerable because you don't know if you're going to be received well. And so I feel like part of what I get to offer is hopefully a safe space to receive them well, and then the responsibility after that, right, to like convey what they're authentically telling me without like messing that up in the edit, I guess. So yeah, it's a hard question to answer, I guess. What do you think?
Yeah, our stories are our identity, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes our identity is amorphous. It's who knows? It's mm-hmm. incomplete. It's in progress. So for someone to say, hey, tell us who you are, what you've done,
right?
It forces us to sort of like put a button on it. Well, this is it, you know, and that's artificial
right.
for a lot of people. So in my experience, those who tell the stories that are just so finished and complete are one of two things, absolutely true mm-hmm. and done over with, and it's their shtick, right? Mm-hmm. It's something they pull out of their back pocket, and let me tell you about the time. Or it's just BS. You know, it's just like they're making it up.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm just too bipolar on that, but I just find that a lot of people just really do struggle, and they're processing experience as they narrate experience. And so what we get on the camera and on the microphone is just a lot of pauses and a lot of ums, all those markers in linguistics that indicate that someone's thinking. Right, they're cognitive right. markers, but I think that's fascinating.
I do too. It's like some sort of like space for self reflection in some way, or not just self reflection, but just reflection in general.
Right, but the flip side is, Chris, and you like we talked about earlier, that's tough to listen to. Are we going to listen to 18 seconds of pause or stammering and like the circumlocutious dialogue where people are, no, let me think about this for a second. No, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, this is what I want to say. I mean, come on, that's like that, you know. So we're, again, back to what we do. We create this thing in the end mm-hmm. that is, it's artifice. It's a product. We have to make those calls.
Yep.
Do you find those calls hard to make, those editing cuts?
Yes.
Are they hard?
I mean, well, the ums and the different things like that are not hard to cut. I think sometimes the things that are hard to cut are things that I feel like are really beautiful things, but they just, distract from what this person is sharing with me. It's like a beautiful tangent, right? So sometimes if I'm trying to tell the arc of someone's story that they're sharing with me, then sometimes I have to cut it out or as someone, you've probably heard the phrase, kill your darlings or whatever. You have to do that. And it's just like, it's hard to put some of that on the editing floor because, and then like in the back of my mind, I'm always like, maybe I can share this in some 30-second video clip or whatever. But, you know, people are so beautiful that they have those beautiful tangents out of the trunk of what they're telling you and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's almost like cutting out a part of who they are, you know?
It does feel like that. And I do struggle with that. Yeah. Whenever I do that, I'm always like, I hope I'm representing this person in a way that feels authentic to the audience, but also hopefully authentic to them who were in that courageous spot to begin with. So,
but we have to make those decisions.
Yep, we have to.
So I have to edit this down to about 30 minutes.
Yep.
Man, I'm going to cut some stuff out. Sorry, Chris.
That's all right.
I don't know what I'm cut. I don't know.
Just leave the laughing, I guess.
Yeah, we'll leave the good stuff in. There's a great story. It's famous among audio people, radio people in particular. There was a guy, late 70s, early 80s or something, that traveled across country, hitchhiked, and he had a tape recorder, and he just recorded people's stories, whatever.
That's awesome.
And he NPR was in its early years. So he ended up in D.C. and he went to NPR and they said, hey, are you interested in this stuff? You know, these travel logs. They were like, oh, absolutely. And they said, oh, but you can edit this stuff. So he was in the editing room. It was the days of tape with the razors. And he tells this story, this gentleman, and he's saying, oh, everything was so good. I couldn't cut it off, but I had to get it down to, you know, an 18-minute spot or whatever they were doing. So he turns to one of the guys and the guy says, well, here's what you do. He rolled out a big old length of tape. Cut it, rolled out, didn't even listen to it, rolled out another big length, cut it. He says, what was left? He says, there's your story.
What?
Right? And the point
was, how
does
that work?
Okay. Well, the point was, the public's not going to know what they're not hearing.
Oh, I see.
So all they will know in the end is what they hear. So you may know that there's this great stuff that's on a cutting room floor, and you know, you may writhe on the floor and curl up in a fetal position and go,
how'd you know I did that?
Right. But the public's just going to listen to the story that you present them, you know. So in the end, it's not a total loss, but yeah, we do struggle with it.
I think even after the edit's done, and you're like, okay, that's done. If I decided to go back and listen to it like a couple weeks later, I'd be like, actually, and then I might mess with it, like how, you know, George Lucas does with the Star Wars movies or whatever. Like, I might mess with another thing or whatever, but I guess it's just trying to figure that out so that it's the best kind of like core of what you're trying to do.
Right. And do you find that you really don't know what that is until you're in the editor? You know, you're trying to get a sense of this arc of the narrative, and this thing is, how do we make this work? And sometimes you just go, oh, this is how it works. But you don't know until you're there. And you have that experience?
I do, yeah. I definitely do. I was filming a woman's story who was in recovery. And I was like, there was a part when I was just kind of like going alongside her and filming her. And I was like, it seems like this story is having a downward trajectory. And I don't really know what this overall arc is going to be. But I felt like I just needed to stay with her and kind of, and even like after I filmed her for a while and I was in the editing room, I was like, what is the arc of what has happened over the span of the past couple of months? What meant a lot to her? And it's, so it's like a second round of listening that happens, or actually it's probably like 10 rounds of listening. It's just like going over like what I visually in an audio way heard from spending time with someone. Yeah. So it's a difficult thing because, But it's a good thing, because I think you're trying to find, you're like, something beautiful happened here. Something kind of really important happened here, especially when like people are in areas of transition, right? There's something going on that's valuable to take notice of, and trying to figure out what that arc is it's fun, but it's also frustrating. So,
you know, we're revealing all of our trade secrets here.
That's okay. If more people want to join in, that'd be all right.
That's right. That's right.
We're doing this work.
We're pulling back the curtain, and look, there's a guy behind that camera monkeying with the story. And
Do you have that experience too with the shaping of the arc of what you're doing?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I've been doing this long enough to just trust what I find, you know. Once I turn the recorder off, that's it. It's done.
Right.
I can't get any of that back.
Right.
So, okay, why worry about it? when I sit down and I'm in the editor and I'm trying to make sense of it, well, if it goes great, oh, awesome. If it's a clunker, you know, I'll call you up, Chris. I ain't going to use this.
Yep. No,
you know, you make it work whatever way, but right. You just don't know. So you just have to trust the universe that you'll find it in there. And if you, and I always think that if, you know, if your ears are open, your eyes are open, your heart's open to, you know, the situation, if, you know, the human side of everything, then you'll find it, you know. And I say this all the time, and I joke, and I say, hey, you know what? If you sound good, I sound good, right? So I have an interest in making sure you sound good. I joke around it, but, you know, it's absolutely true. This will come back to, you know, the storytellers. Sometimes people just have this difficulty, and sometimes they're struggling with their story, and sometimes you leave a bit of that in, but, you know, sometimes it's not flattering.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I just don't, I don't see the need in painting anybody in this unflattering light. I'm not a research scientist here. This right. is not an ethnography project, you know? Mm-hmm. So I cut that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, elderly people who have cognitive issues often present challenges, dementia. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked with a guy one time who told me every story four times. Mm-hmm. Ironically, the third time was always the best. I couldn't understand that.
But really.
It was weird. You know, I wasn't going to leave all that stuff in. And so our thumb is on the scale, right? So we make it work that way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people should realize, that these stories, I mean, to be honest, these are stories that are crafted by people like you and me.
Yeah.
For a purpose, you know,
yes.
for effect, or what, however you want to put that. But you know, it's like Ansel Adams used to say, hey, you know, there's always the photographer in this picture. Don't forget that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always encourage people to think about the person behind the recordings, who are as important as the storyteller themselves.
I think that's
we're storytellers,
true.
Right? Do you call yourself a storyteller?
I feel like I more want to be a storyteller, but I'm trying to get more comfortable with that idea, because that's really what it is, what's happening. I'm interpreting what people are sharing me into a story format. And it's kind of like what you were saying. It's like with photography or with whatever, there's boundaries to the thing we're creating to share maybe specific things that we're choosing. And I guess my hope is that as we do that, that there's a rightness in it. I don't know if right is the right term, but like a goodness in it or something. Because, you know, some of that stuff is like they're cutting out is kind of like, I think you're right. Like kind of like in the process of where they're at. I like Fred Rogers a lot,
yeah,
but I think sure. he had a real gift of seeing past those like things that we as people maybe get hung up on, whether it's like, physical things or mental things or emotional things or whatever. He had the ability to be like, to see past it and see a person there. And so my hope with this stuff is that I can do that kind of work. That's like, get past some of that stuff that might be distracting, but recognize the human that's there and lift up that voice, I guess. So.
Hmm. So you started Human City Films.
Yes.
And you're on the internet.
Yes.
Okay. And how can people find Human City Films?
Human City Films, you can find at humancityfilms.com. You can find it on Facebook or Instagram. Rivertownanthology.com or Facebook, you can look for Rivertown Anthology. It's on Instagram too. So, yep, all those places.
I'm looking at your site now. Mm-hmm. These are just wonderful stories. So well crafted. My hat off to you.
Thanks.
For your talents and your skills here, it is really remarkable. And I think you do a great service to, you know, this topic that we've been talking about today, you know, people's stories. Do you have any favorite Rivertown stories? Do you have any
favorite ones?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. Let me see. I don't know if I have a favorite one. The ones I gravitate toward are when people are dealing with something that has a lot of layers that they're when they're trying to figure out something. I don't know if I could pick a favorite one. Let me think. You know, there's one that I'm almost done with that's, and so that's probably why it's in my mind more. I'm not choosing favorites.
I hear you. I know how it is. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's an artist, his name's Marlon Gist, and he's an Alquip artist. And I was going to film him because I just found that his work was really great and he was really interesting. So I like set up a time to film him with another man I met named Paul McDaniels at Uncommon Grounds Cafe. And so we're like, okay, we're going to film him. And so we'll start on October 2nd or whatever. And then on October 1st, he put on his Facebook page that his gallery was closing. So the story I was going to do about him just as an artist wound up being about both him as an artist, but about him as an artist trying to have an art gallery in Aliquippa. And more importantly, I think something that he kind of shared as he was talking, kind of this idea that things that are beautiful, maybe you have to go looking for them. Maybe they're not just like things you pass by, and but like he's such an amazing artist. But he had this problem where no one would take time to just go look because they, for whatever reason, he felt like maybe it was because it was Aliquippa. But that story sticks out to me because it's a little bit representative of the work that I think you and I are doing, where it's like taking time to go and find something beautiful. So for that reason, I like that story.
When do you think that'll be done?
Well, I filmed it in October, so it's not really that soon.
I know how that goes.
Yeah.
I was looking through my back catalog. I've got something there from 2014 I haven't even finished yet.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, I
what
didn't know
that one.
That's a veterans interview that...
Okay.
I don't know. I'll get to it. I'll get to it, I guess. So trying to go through this methodically and systematically with some sort of program and strategy,
yep.
That's very important, you know, for the long haul.
Yes.
I think these are so important that they really need this kind of attention. And this is this is how, you know, I'd sort of like to wrap up here. I think that all these little historical societies and all these communities should be the hubs, the centers, the locations for capturing these community stories.
That's a great idea.
I mean, why not, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they, by virtue of their existence, they kind of are putting themselves as the center for history.
Yeah.
Well, as we, you know, we started off this conversation, you know, this is history too. This is people history.
It is, yeah.
So if these community organizations, these local history agencies, I call them, because some are called museums, some are called societies, some are called associations, whatever. If they could become this center for these stories, I think that would go a long ways to preserving this often overlooked kind of history, this stuff that's right here, right now.
Yeah.
Once that old World War II vet dies, you ain't getting that story back. Once that oldest person in the community goes, gone.
I know. I'm aware of that. And whenever I get too aware of that, I think I'm not doing enough to do preserve people's stories. But
right.
But it seems like, I don't know, this area with the dramatic turns it's had, like with people who are still alive and experienced it, it's like, I feel like there's so many stories. I hope I can be a part of capturing some of these because there's a lot of value in it, right? There's so much value that it's a little bit afraid of it getting lost, I suppose.
And it will. If we don't do it, who will do it?
Right.
If, as I mentioned, these historical societies, museums, if they don't do this as organizations in their communities, who's going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
This programmatic approach to doing this kind of work, I think is very important. That's why I ask you to be on the show here. We need to share what we do with the public to say that there are people like us out here.
Yeah.
We're willing to do this work. It's going to take some coordination. It should. It should have support from the communities. We should have partnerships with museums and historical societies so that we can make this happen.
Right.
Because you know what? You're going to be able to do only what you can do as an independent filmmaker. I will do what I can do as an independent audiographer. Yeah, but we can do so much more. This is really my pitch.
Okay.
All you people out there listening, you organizations and you people who like to support historical societies with your funding, your support dollars, this work needs to be funded too.
Mm-hmm.
This work needs to be supported. And there are people like you and I who are willing to do that work. So how do we make this happen? Well, one of the things that I am trying to do is I created a local history podcast initiative that is trying to connect with local historical societies with this technology of podcasting. Some places have their own podcasts. We do a sort of a cooperative thing, but you know, we're able to get some of these stories captured, you know, through podcasting, not necessarily the full sit down, you know, like the great work you do. I mean, just the whole film thing. I mean, that's just wonderful stuff, very labor intensive. So, you know, I'm trying to do this through this kind of end run
right
here. There are probably lots of different ways we can do it, but hey, however we do it, I mean, that's, if we don't do it, you know, we talked about that. It's going to it's going to be a loss to all of us.
I think so, yeah. And I also think that if other people are interested in this kind of work and they want to find ways to collaborate, or even if they have stories, especially if they feel like they know someone with a story, or they themselves feel like they've learned something or have something, then I think, you know, reaching out to be like, I actually have something to share. I think that would be great.
So people can reach you through Human City Films.
They can, yes.
They can find you there through the social media.
Yes.
Reach out to you with a story.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you may be inundated.
I know, right? I will have to choose at that point, right?
That's right. Yeah, be careful what you ask for, because I've experienced this. I've had to turn away people.
Yeah.
I just don't have the wherewithal. And sometimes the bandwidth to deal with all these requests. And I always say to people, you know, like a grandchild would bring grandpa and we'd sit down and do an interview. And I would say, you know, we got what we got here.
Yeah.
But I strongly encourage you to continue asking grandpa about the stories and record those one way or another, whichever way you can.
Yeah.
You know, I've had people, you know, they say, yeah, I'm writing this stuff down. I went to Walmart and I bought, you know, a little Sony camcorder. Great.
Yeah.
Continue, because you and I can only do so much.
Right, yeah. We're only one person each, so.
We're one person each. But the people closest to the stories, like family members, you know, if nothing else, they will have something preserved for their family that will be meaningful.
And ultimately, I mean, when I think about it the way you're phrasing it, it's like, if what you are doing or what I'm doing, if any part of that inspires other people to capture stories like in this area, then it's also encouraging that act of listening. And especially like, you know, like with people you might not ordinarily listen to, whether it's like in your immediate family or extended family or just people in the community, if it just kind of like says, okay, you know what? I actually don't know what this is like for you. Can you please tell me so I can understand you better and what your story is all about? I think that's great.
Right. Ultimately, this is really just a human act.
Doesn't that seem like, I don't want to say now more than ever, but doesn't that act of connecting with someone and that give and take with someone in the same space that you're in, the same room you're in or whatever, doesn't that seem like maybe a skill that is drifting away a little bit? I don't know. So I think just the conversation and the connecting part is something that that I'm really interested in.
Wait, what was that? I was thinking about what I was going to say next. I wasn't thinking what you were saying.
Okay. I was saying that like...
No, I'm saying...
What? Oh, you were joking.
Right over your head. Where I was going with that was...
I was allowing you grace because I thought maybe you were being serious.
Well, part of this is, you know, conversational skills are learned and we have to put a little bit of effort into those conversation skills, rather than, you know, turn-taking, mm-hmm. you know, to have a conversation, it's really about listening. Mm-hmm. It's about paying attention to what other people are saying. And so, you and I have developed that in our work. I mean, you know, that's something that we do. Mm-hmm. That's a skill set that we have with so many people. You sat down next to somebody at a bus stop and, you know, the chances are it's just a turn-taking experiment. But this is very different. But the rewards of taking the time to really engage another human being, those rewards are tremendous.
They really are. Like I always learn something from the people I interview. And it's not just, you know, it's not just with the camera. It's just that act of, if I'm with someone and I can hear what they're saying, I can quiet down whatever might be going on in my life for a little bit to allow them that space, then there's a lot of value in that for everyone, I think.
Yeah, a lot of human value. And this mm-hmm. Brings us back full circle, really. This is a kind of history that is, it's not the faded photograph. It's not the, you know, the artifact behind a glass display case. This is not that kind of history. This is what you and I do is living, breathing, human-centered history, if that mm-hmm. makes any sense, you know, history is now. History is right now. This is happening. Mm-hmm. These people in our communities right now are living, breathing. They have stories to share and tell. And to the degree we go after that, awesome. If we don't, there will be consequences.
I agree. So I don't usually say that out loud, but I think I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the best we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Chris, you know, boy, we could just talk for hours and hours.
I was just thinking that. Like, I better not bring up another thing because I could see how that would go on.
I've got to run out of here and do some more recording somewhere. Hey, thanks so much, man, for being on this podcast. But more importantly, you know, sharing your thoughts around the stories. I think this adds and contributes to this movement that you and I definitely think is valuable, and that is the Living History.
I really appreciate you having me. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for talking about this with me. All the story. It's fun to talk about story.
Yeah.
And community stories and everything like that with people who are interested in it.
What our listeners aren't going to hear is all the geeky nerd talk that we had earlier about cameras and microphones and that sort of stuff.
That's right. You can find that on your other podcast, Geeky Nerd Stuff.
.com.
That's not a real site. I mean, it probably is, but it's not yours.
Oh, you know, somebody's got it out there, yeah. Hey, thanks, man.
Yep, thanks.
We need the smaller organizations to keep that history alive and going, and we need the community members
to continue to support that, or else years from now, it's not going to exist.
You're listening to the Beaver County History Podcast, a production of the Social Voice Project.
What is history?
Seems to be a straightforward idea.
Yeah, that's a kind of an interesting science story.
Thank you for having me on the podcast. This is one that I definitely enjoy that dives into local history.
What is history?
It's the history of a small, well-defined area.
History is his story.
And it's also her story.
It is an account of past events in sequence of time.
The people,
the places,
and the events in all of our lives.
It was very interesting and really brought history to life.
This is why I don't like video, because, you know, if you're talking to somebody and it's a great conversation, but they end up start picking their nose, you can't use that, you know?
Well, you can, well, but you just have to switch to B-roll.
Yeah, that's right.
Or be really authentic.
That's right. You have to do all that crazy stuff, right? Yeah, with audio, man, I tell you what, you can splice it all together and it's just seamless. And
yeah.
So yeah, someone could like murder somebody in the middle of a conversation. You can splice that out, you know, no one would ever know. You know?
It's true.
Yeah. You have to cut away from the blood on video.
Yeah. That's true.